Ship's morning brought a rash of complaints from Kristoffsen that conditions were intolerable and he would hold Vada Transport responsible for a laundry list of deficiencies. Kai looked up relevant portions of the Interstellar Universal Commercial Code to reassure herself that she was not making the company liable for vast damages, and then reminded him that in time of war, which this was, passengers were obliged to cooperate fully with ship's officers.
I am cooperating. You are simply being unreasonable in your demands.
Kai was tempted to ask if he thought he could do it better, but he certainly did think that, and she wasn't going to give him the opening. Her job wouldn't be easier if he thought she could be manipulated that way.
You will have ample opportunity to make a formal complaint later. In the meantime, you will simply have to accept the reality of the situation.
Oh.
Kai shook her head at Lee, who was back in the pilot's chair.
He's trouble. I'm glad you're not one of the temperish Vadas.
I am. But 4 years at the academy taught me to handle it.
How are you feeling?
Better than I could have expected, from what the medic said.
You looked dead. We were all scared. Those horrible people...
It was Skeldon. If that idiot hadn't tried to be a hero, Master Sergeant Pitt wouldn't have hit me.
But there was no reason to hit you. You hadn't done anything.
Protocols. Just typical military. I don't blame her.
Now that she had thought about it, though, she was being remarkably calm about it. Kai wondered if they had tweaked her memories or her personality.
Well, you're more forgiving than I would be.
It's not forgiving, it's understanding. They figure that the captain is the key to the ship and responsible for everything that happens. That's in the law, too. If you suddenly went crazy and I didn't manage it, it would be my fault.
So, if they blamed you for Skeldon, why didn't they kill you, too?
I'm not sure. But I'm happy about it, and I'm not going to annoy them.
This thing with the passengers, is it really a contract, or did they just dump them on us?
It's a contract. Strange, but a contract. A good one, too. I hadn't realized that mercenary companies are just a business, really. The contract for haulage looked just like the ones we use for regular cargo, only specifying passengers.
But why us? I mean, they have other ships they've interned.
I don't know. If I were guessing, it's that they have a use for the other ships, or that they wanted all these individuals away from their own ships for some reason.
Will we make anything from it?
If they pay, and their credit rating is excellent, it will more than cover the cost of the sealed unit and installation. Assuming there's any place to get a sealed unit and someone to install it. I asked about that and they said not now, in the tone that means don't bother us. But surely when ISC replaces the Ansibles, we'll be able to communicate with home and with Belinta.
Gary Tobai came onto the bridge. He looked older in some way.
Belinta's gonna be furious.
I know, but there's nothing we can do about it. We can't fight warships, we can't jump out, we can't call and explain. They undoubtedly know the Sabine Ansibles are out and should grasp that whatever's happened is a genuine emergency. What we can do is survive the next few days, and hopefully it will be only a few days, get rid of our little friends, pick up our cargo, go back to Sabine, and fix the FTL drive. That shouldn't take long if the repair yards are still there. At least we know they have the size unit we need, and there can't be that many ships needing that size.
Probably not. I just hope they're honest.
As honest as they can be, was my assessment. And I was on their ship and met one of their officers. We do have the contract in writing.
10 days. What can they hope to accomplish in 10 days? You can't win wars in 10 days. You can only lose them that fast.
Which means the other side won them. My concern is the passengers' security. With Kristoffsen being such a pain and the way they outnumber us.
We keep them locked in.
We can't keep them locked in all the time. We have to feed them, and we have only one galley. It's my fault. I didn't think to ask the Mercs for a field kitchen.
I suppose you're right. Are they all like Kristoffsen?
No, not all. He's the worst, and I think he's got a small group that he's inciting to difficulty. But the others aren't nearly as bad. There's one, Pazin, who's quite sensible. I'm thinking of talking to him, seeing if he'll monitor the situation for me.
One of us should do that.
Why? I think it's captain-to-captain stuff myself.
Well, you're the captain. Still, just don't get yourself nearly killed again.
Not planning to.
Unfortunately, Kai's background gave her no insight into the management of 50 unwilling passengers in a cargo ship only roughly converted to hauling them. She wondered if anything in the Commandant's private library would have helped.
If I'd picked out the right logbook, would I now know exactly what to do? Probably not.
The rest of main shift passed with little difficulty. Work teams came up to the galley with clean dishes, warmed meals, took them back, washed the dishes. Captain Pazin, she noticed on the monitors, was leading his crewmen and some others in calisthenics. Better than sitting around being bored. Mitt watched the environmental system closely, monitoring every slight change in values, since it was functioning near its design limits. The first surge changes had all settled down at the new equilibrium points, but he wasn't taking any chances. Quincy, with nothing much to do since the in-system drive was shut down, came into the bridge several times to discuss the needed repairs. After a second check around her own crew, Kai decided to interview the other captains one at a time, leaving the difficult Kristoffsen for last. Pazin, who had been so helpful already, she put first and asked him to come to the galley.
Captain Pazin!
Captain Vada, how are things?
Fine, so far. All systems nominal at this time. And you and your crew?
We're fine. I appreciate how difficult this is for you, Captain. All these passengers in your ship and your cargo out there in vacuum. Tell me, is this your first voyage?
As captain, yes, it is. Not exactly going the way it's supposed to.
You seem to be handling the stress well, though. I confess, I'm impressed with your calm.
Panic never helps. And I have a very good, very experienced crew.
But not experienced at this, I suspect.
No, just good. Captain Pazin, I realize you may not want to answer this, but what is your impression of Captain Kristoffsen?
Jake, known him for years. A hothead. Not a bad guy, but definitely a hothead. He's proud of being the Rose's captain, and he's acting like a total idiot right now. Which you know already.
My concern is that he might convince others that they should
do something stupid? Mutiny of the passengers or something? I doubt it. Jake might want them to, but I don't think they're that panicky. And he's not really that brave. As long as the gravity stays put in the air and so on.
Kai hadn't really thought of mutiny, just constant complaints and harassment. But now that Pazin said the word, her stomach tightened.
No reason it shouldn't.
Do you want me to keep an eye on him for you? I can understand your concern. You and your crew are outnumbered by a large margin. And if it would ease your mind, I could keep a weather eye out.
Would you?
Sure. I truly don't think Jake's going to do more than whine and moan and demand special treatment. He was livid about those GoldenEye raspberries, but I think you did exactly the right thing. Still, you don't need anything else to worry about.
Pazin clearly understood her various dilemmas. She was tempted to ask his advice about some of her other problems, but she knew she should keep a decent separation between herself and her passengers. She only hoped she hadn't overstepped it already.
Thanks. This is not one of the situations they teach you about in...
Kai wasn't sure why she didn't want the passengers to know about her academy training. She was only sure she didn't. Back on the bridge, Kai found Quincy, who had taken over as third shift watch officer, hunched over a complicated-looking readout.
How's the cargo doing?
Fine. Just hanging out there the way it should. I still think we should have tethered it, just in case. But as long as nobody turns the drive on, we shouldn't have a problem.
Nobody's going to turn the drive on. Anything else?
Engineering's fine, except for that FTL drive. I'm a little concerned about the fact that we have 5 senior and 3 junior engineers aboard. If they wanted to mess us up, they could. I've made sure we have someone on watch each shift, looking for intrusions.
Ship sabotage was something else Kai hadn't thought of.
I think Kristoffsen is our one bad apple. And Pazin's going to keep an eye on him.
You asked him to?
No, he volunteered. Says he's known Kristoffsen for years, thinks he's just a blowhard. But he'll let me know if it gets serious.
And you're sure Pazin is trustworthy?
Kai's stomach twinged again. If he wasn't, her record for trusting the untrustworthy would have another notch.
I certainly hope so. How are you getting along with the new crew? How upset are they about Skeldon?
They're fine, Captain. They're upset, of course. But he never did really fit in with them. The ship that left them behind had a crew of 1,200 or some such. None of them had met Skeldon before that shore leave, anyway. It was a random drawing who went when. And the military cleaned up his body and your quarters so they didn't have to see.
You did, didn't you?
Yeah. It wasn't pretty.
Kai had been shown vids of post-battle cleanup at the academy, and she could imagine the mess. The stains left by the cleaning methods showed how extensive the mess had been. She forced that thought aside. Already, Skeldon's face was blurring in her memory. No. Well, I'd better do another interview. Captain Lucas, with no Kristofsen to spark his hostility, seemed a pleasant enough officer. Pepper and salt hair pulled back into a short, thick braid, dark eyes difficult to read. He professed himself satisfied that Vada Transport was doing the best it could for its passengers.
Of course, that fool of a passenger captain, that Chris... whatever. That sort always think they deserve special treatment. All he does is complain. But I'm happy to cooperate. Though, forgive me for mentioning it, but you seem rather young for a captain. Unless, of course, you're a Humod variant I'm unfamiliar with.
I first went to space as crew at 13. Age and experience are independent variables.
Well said, Captain Vada. I hope you'll be able to keep us informed, as the mercenaries inform you, of the progress of their plans.
True for all of us, Captain Lucas. I appreciate your cooperation at this difficult time. Captain Opuntz of Braden's Hope seemed quiet and contained after Payson and Lucas. He had no questions, he said. He made no complaints. No suggestions. Nothing. Kai tried repeatedly to get him to open up, but he deflected all her questions and comments with a perfect shield of calm unconcern. It was like talking to a block of polished stone. He was sure everything would be all right in the end. He said that several times. She watched him head back down the corridor and hoped very much he was right. Aspergia's Captain Gemin, by contrast, had a wild bush of bright red hair and conveyed suppressed energy. He had bright gray eyes, an almost fixed stare.
This is such an unusual situation, unprecedented in my experience, and I dare say in yours. I can hardly wait for the Ansibles to get back up so I can check that out. Whatever the Mercs said, they must have blown them. Who else could? Although there was that case, was it 8 standards ago, the one at Hall's Landing? Just agricultural chemicals, didn't they say? And your cargo was something agricultural, wasn't it?
Tractors. Implements, not chemicals. Kai wondered if the man's pupils were a normal size or if he was on something. She didn't know. She didn't like having to consider that.
Well, we have to do something, don't we? I mean, we're all civilians, traders. There's no reason for them to intern our ships, is there? Can't you just run us up to jump and get us out of this system? Someplace we can file a complaint?
The mercenaries have 2 warships. This ship has no weapons. Trying to outrun them would be a very bad idea. He didn't need to know their FTL drive was inoperable.
Oh, well, I can see that. Yes, all right then. I suppose we're just stuck here for 10 days. Of course, I don't mean to cause you any trouble, Captain Vada, but really, that Kristofsen person, he's constantly talking, whining, complaining. It gets on my nerves.
I'm sure it's a difficult time for all of you. For all of us, actually. Captain Kristofsen is probably concerned about his passengers.
That's not what he's talking about. He's talking about sleeping on the floor and having no private room, and how the rest of us are so uncultured, and anyway, there's nothing to do.
I'm sorry. Though there's always Captain Payson's calisthenics group.
Oh, him. He's so hearty. I was just wondering if you had any entertainment cubes? Something relaxing, maybe? I have my portable reader, but they rushed us so to leave the ship that I left behind my collection of cubes.
Gemin needed relaxing, that was obvious, but Kai didn't think her collection of technical data cubes relating to this ship and Slaughter Key commercial law were what Gemin had in mind. Sorry, I will ask my crew what they have when we have time. She pushed back from the table and stood. Gemin clambered up slowly.
I just wanted to say, this is really very inconvenient.
Gemin shambled away down the passage. Kai agreed completely. Inconvenient barely covered it. And now she had Kristofsen, an interview she could predict would be unpleasant. Sure enough, he came in haughty and annoyed, and left in the same mood. In between, he managed to complain about everything. The food, the water, The limitation of showers, the lack of privacy, the lack of entertainment, the attitudes and behavior of the other passengers, on and on. Kai listened until he ran down.
It's a difficult situation for all of us.
You can't pretend it's as bad for you. You at least have your own cabin. I suppose even on this tub, the captain has some privacy.
He thumped the table with his fist.
It's outrageous. That's what it is. 10 days. What if the mercs just run off and leave us to the untender mercies of the ISC?
Why would they do that?
Because they don't want to be held responsible for blowing the Ansibles. Look, if they go, you have to get us out of here.
It's much safer to do as we're told. They have weapons. We don't.
Oh, this is ridiculous!
Kristofferson threw up his hands and stamped back to the passenger hold without saying more. But Kai could almost see the unspoken words hovering over his angry head. Several days passed without incident. Kristofferson made no more complaints, though he glowered at Kai when she made her daily visit to the cargo holds to meet with the assembled captains. She wondered if Payson had spoken to him, or if he had decided for himself that complaining didn't work. Payson always smiled pleasantly, as did Lucas. Opunce remained a polite but remote enigma. Jemin now drooped in dramatic boredom. Their various crew persons stayed politely back while she was there, not interfering. The environmental system continued to hold within its design limits. Still, she felt uneasy. If excessive trust had been her problem, now was the hour for suspicion. On the third day, she called her senior crew to her quarters.
One thing. You all have implants, right?
Yes, why?
You know I don't anymore. The head injury was bad enough, they had to extract mine and use it for a reconstruction matrix.
That sounded marginally better than memory download.
So I'm limited in interface with ship systems to the earbud, and I can't sleep with it in.
So you want us to be especially vigilant while you're asleep?
Not just that. If Captain Payson is wrong, and Kristofferson isn't just a blowhard, he has not only his engineering section head and number two, but his communications officer and a junior comtech. If he's sneaky, he might think of suborning the internal communications so our sensors don't actually tell us what's really going on. My implant had special circuits for that. Do yours?
Not mine.
Mine either. It must have been an override thing for captains only.
I was afraid of that. And we don't have a dedicated comtech aboard. What about our newest crew? Are any of them specialists in internal systems?
I'm afraid not.
As I see it, we have two real weak spots. First, someone might steal the command wand. I am sleeping with that, and our passengers are locked in, so I don't expect that. Second, someone could reprogram the system to answer a different code. This ship doesn't have some of the internal security features of larger ones. Configuring it for a last voyage with a small crew left us vulnerable to a situation no one anticipated.
Nor could have. You can't be faulted for that, Captain.
I'm not feeling guilty, Quince, just concerned. How do we ensure that no one can tinker with the system and take it over? We've got them physically separated, but almost all of them have implants, and I don't know how theirs operate, what their limits are.
Huh. I didn't think of their implants being able to function with this ship.
Neither did I until I watched Payson direct his work party without saying a word aloud. I knew they had the implants, the bulge is visible, but the possibility of their being active here slipped by me.
Manual check of all systems, then. As continuous as we can make it, which isn't very, Captain. I have only my five, plus me. Hospitin can help monitor drives, but I wouldn't think he could do general engineering.
Right.
Couldn't you put the internal system on voice recognition control, at least as a requirement for changing parameters?
I could, but then if something happens to me, and it already has, you're in trouble. Besides, if they are up to something, how hard would it be for them to get a voice pattern off me? They may already have one. No, we need a better way to check the integrity of the system. If you think of anything, let me know. Otherwise, keep very close watch. I don't actually expect trouble this shift. If Kristofferson does something, I think it'll be in the next day or so, not now. But I don't want to be caught off guard.
If only they had weapons, real weapons. Kai asked Mihar to show her how to shoot the pistol bow. Mihar piled pillows behind her practice target.
We'll start the easy way. I used to shoot down in the cargo hold, but this will do. Here.
It was absurdly easy.
Mihar loaded the 4-bolt reserve with the color-tipped practice bolts, put a bolt in the groove, and pulled back the cocking lever before she handed it to Kai.
Point and click.
Kai pulled the trigger. Across the compartment, a bolt stood out of the target. Kai pulled the lever again. That bolt buried itself in one of the pillows.
Huh, no recoil. I compensated for something that wasn't there.
Again, be sure the prod's horizontal.
Kai shot again and again, and when she had shot all 5 bolts, she looked at the pattern. Nothing to be proud of at that distance, but 4 of the bolts were in the target. Mihar pulled them out.
I always load in the same color sequence. That way I can easily tell which one went where.
What's the maximum range on this thing?
Depends if you want to puncture something or just kiss it. And of course, what gravity you're working in. For target shooting, 20 meters is about the limit. Outdoors, you can treat it like artillery. Point it up in the air and get somewhat more distance, but no accuracy. Pistol bows don't have a lot of draw weight, so they can't give much velocity.
What I want to do is look dangerous.
Kai hoped looking dangerous would be enough. She had reloaded and now aimed and fired all the bolts as fast as she could.
How was that?
Pretty good. I might be a hair faster, but not much. You can see why they aren't military weapons for anything but very specialized uses. Slow rate of fire and lousy penetration. You have a knack for this, Captain.
Target practice with pistols. This is more sensitive to tilt, though.
Yes. Some of us use an offset grip to help out on that because the natural thing is to hold the hand slightly tilted. The long crossbows are easier to keep level because of the longer stock.
Kai looked at the weapon in her hand.
They just don't look very dangerous. And what we need is the appearance of danger more than the danger itself.
I don't know. A lot of people associate these with spy stories where they're usually carried by the bad guys and the bolts are always tipped with something poisonous or corrosive.
Mihar pulled out another pack of bolts.
And these can kill at close range. I use the marker tips for shipboard practice, but I have the competition bolts with me.
Kai looked at the short, stout bolts and touched the conical steel tips.
Huh, sharp enough. What will it go through?
Not military armor, of course. I've never tried it on law enforcement vests, so I don't know. Rumor says it depends on whether they use the kind that sense impact velocity or not. But it goes right through clothes and, of course, skin.
I wish it looked nastier. My feeling is these are too slow and we have too few of them to fight off an actual mutiny. But if we can startle or cow the instigators...
Well, I do have a pack of broadpoints.
Mihar dug deeper into her kit and handed over a pack of bolts tipped with what looked to Kai like archaeological exhibits. Jagged, many pointed. Kai touched the points lightly.
Phew, these look dangerous, all right. Did you ever use those, Mihar?
Used to do a little pot hunting back home. Thing is, Captain, none of this has the stopping power of firearms, but pain has a stopping power of its own. Less when someone's really engaged in a fight, but if they're still standing there making threats...
I hope we don't have to use them.
Nonetheless, she practiced until, down the longest length of passage afforded, she could group the 5 marker bolts in the innermost ring of the target. It would have been fun to have something like this back on Corley when she was a kid, instead of the toy longbows that invariably got caught in the undergrowth of the tick plantations where she and her brothers had played. She could have sneaked up on them, left colored dots on their jackets. She pulled her mind back to the present. This was not a game. If she had to use the weapon, it would be for real. She hoped the presence of the mercenary ships, that obvious threat, would keep her passengers from trying anything. Kai glared at the scan screens. For tactical situations, she'd been taught, the basic scans were almost useless because of long and varying scan delays. Glennis Jones didn't mount any of the equipment that would have let her keep track of where the warships were in anything approaching real time, nor did the ship have the advanced AI to integrate all the data and present a combined plot. It was reasonably good at noticing when things changed, and excellent in the things any cargo ship needed, such as micromillimeter accuracy when docking.
How did the early space travelers ever manage to get from one planet to another in the same system?
Some time ago, she wasn't even sure how long, one of the warships had been near Secundus, and now, if her antiquated system had identified it correctly, it was near Prime. The other one was a long way away from either. Lee and Zelda had been arguing over the temporary appearance of something small and distant, which Kai herself would ordinarily have considered a system glitch.
I'll bet it was an ISC probe.
She had seen it only on the recording, where it looked too small to be any kind of ship.
Captain Vada, we're leaving the system for a few days. The situation is complex. We need to communicate with the ISC about the Ansible destruction. We expect to be back in ample time to pick up the passengers on day 10.
Kai's stomach clenched. She had trusted them. She had depended on them, on the threat of their weaponry. Leaving?
Yes, just continue as you are. We will inform Vada Transport and your passengers' parent companies of your safety via ISC contacts once we're in a system with functional Ansibles. You're not having any problems, are you? Everyone behaving? Environmental systems coping?
Should I tell them about my concerns, or would that be seen as weak?
So far.
Good. We expect to be back in just a few days, as I said.
Kai knew what that hiss meant. The warships were outbound fast, possibly already micro-jumping towards safe long-jump parameters. And expectations in deep space travel still outran performance. They might be back or they might not, if they and she were unlucky. Still, they were in a relatively safe situation. If the Mercs did not return, she could get her ship back to Sabine Prime, or close enough for Sabine's emergency service ships to come remove the passengers.
So, why do I feel as if someone had just poured a jug of ice water down my spine?
Less than an hour later, Captain Lucas called her from the passengers' quarters.
We want to talk to you, all us captains.
What's the problem?
We know the Mercs have left. Now's our chance to get back to our ships. Get on our way. You can take us back.
No.
You didn't know they left?
I knew. They're coming back.
I doubt it. They probably stripped the cargo off our ships and made off with it. Damn pirates that they are.
They're coming back.
You don't know that. You can't possibly be sure. You have an obligation to take care of us, moral and legal, under the code. They aren't here. They don't have a gun pointed at you. You have no excuse for holding us against our will.
That might be true technically, but Kai was not going to give in to Kristoffsen.
Your passengers in a time of war. It's your duty.
Oh, stuff it.
In the corner of the screen, Payson's mouth quirked.
It's not a war if one of the armies runs away.
And just how did you know the mercenaries had left?
They looked at each other first, then back at the vid pickup.
It's our implants.
Jemin had not been the one Kai expected to answer. Kristoffsen glared at him, but Jemin didn't wilt.
We could pick up signals.
If they could pick up scan signals, or communication signals, on their implants, they might be able to contact ships without her knowledge. Kai shivered and hoped it hadn't shown.
I can't get you out of the system. Our FTL drive isn't working. As for returning you to your ships, I don't have enough fuel for the in-system drive to do that.
She did have enough to get them to Prime, but that did not fulfill her contract. Nor was Prime safe. Kai tapped the mic, and they quieted.
Believe it or not, as you choose. But the fact is, I'm not jumping you out of this system because I can't. And I'm not wasting what in-system fuel I have running around trying to take you all back to your ships. We're just going to ride this out for the next 5 or 6 days until the Mercs come back.
You're scared. You're just too young and too scared to understand that this is our one opportunity. Whatever happens now, Vada, it's your fault.
The vid clicked off from their end. Kai stared at the blank screen thoughtfully, then called Gary Tobai and explained the situation.
I don't know the range and capabilities of their implants, but we must somehow secure the ship's control systems.
Right. Quincy's got all the engineering personnel on six on, six off. We're doing our best, but, you know, from inside those cargo holds, they don't have far to go to access the linkages with hardware, and that doesn't even address wireless attacks from their implants.
Yeah, I know. Do your best, and I know you already are.
Kai signed off. She'd had little enough sleep herself in the past several days, and now she would get less. She should take a nap now. Because whatever the other captains thought they would do, they probably wouldn't do it yet, she hoped. That nap turned into several hours of deep sleep, from which she awoke to a faint vibration. The in-system drive. She surged out of her bed, yanking on her uniform.
Captain!
I'm awake! Coming!
In the passage, Lee and Garland, both looking scared, stared at her.
Get Hospitin! Drive's on! I want it off!
On the bridge, Riel and Cheryl were busy at their boards.
Drive just came on, Captain. Full boost. I can't get it off.
And I can't get anywhere with the nav board. I told Lee to get Hospitin. He's a drives man. Maybe he can get it off.
What do you think?
They got control somehow. Got into the ship's systems. Probably one of the places Gary and Quincy were worried about.
And if they had control of the drives and navigation controls, they also could unlock the cargo holds. They could be anywhere on the ship. She flicked on the monitors that should show the holds. One was blank, not even flickering. The other showed a hold mostly empty, with a clot of bodies crowding the hatch to the maintenance passage.
Mihar, to the bridge, on the double, bring the stuff. Off-duty crew, to the bridge.
How was I stupid enough not to keep one of the pistol bows in my cabin? Is it the injury or something else that I keep missing things?
Here, Captain.
Mihar held out the bow Kai had practiced with and kept the other. Kai looked. Mihar had already loaded the magazine with the broad points.
They're in the maintenance passage. I can't see anything in the monitor for number two, but they've got the hatch open from number one. I'm sure they're headed for the bridge. Quincy, there's not much chance that we can reach the mercenaries now, but send a message. Let someone know we've got a problem. Everyone else, defend the bridge. They can't come at you all at once.
She had to go. She had to get down the passage before they got to the branch, where they could split up and come at her from more than one direction.
Garland, Bia, come with Mihar and me.
Down past the galley, locking the galley hatch after Garland and Bia had acquired cutlery, closing and locking the wreck area's secondary hatch. She heard them before she saw them, thanks to the curvature of the passage. Her heart pounded. She could feel the surge of excitement through her body, as she had before hand-to-hand competitions at the academy. And there they were. 5 meters away, maybe four. She expected Kristoffsen, and he was there. Behind, Pazin, and Pazin's mate, who had a hostage. Gary Tobai, his arms twisted behind him, the mate's arm around Gary's neck, with a small but wicked knife laid to it. Surprise stopped her so fast that Garland bumped into her from behind.
Pazin.
Pazin grinned at her surprise, clearly delighted.
It's time to let more experienced officers take over.
You!
You're too young, my dear. Too easy. Jake and I knew exactly how to handle you. He can't do fatherly.
I had no frame of reference. Just get on with it.
Oh, doesn't matter. We have control of the drives, of the navigation settings, your communications.
Kai was aware of everything. The shine of their eyeballs, the sound of their breathing, the slight increased warmth from so many bodies jammed so close into the passage, the smell of their excitement. Pazin, Pazin's mate, Kristoffsen, not the other captains. No, there was Opuntz toward the back, looking just as expressionless as ever. Her gaze came back to those in front, and for the first time she met Gary Tobai's eyes. Gray, slightly faded, his expression strained. His mouth moved.
Let him go!
Hand us your captain's wands. Then we'll see. You're just bluffing. You don't have the experience to handle this.
Pazin's mate had Gary for a shield. Pazin's mate had a knife to Gary's throat. Gary's own little black folding knife. Back at the academy, they'd all seen the famous list of standard things not to do in a crisis, taken from entertainment vids in which the plot depended on both hero and villain doing something stupid. Going out alone in the dark on a sudden hunch, walking into the dark alley instead of waiting for backup, dropping his weapon because his sidekick sweetheart child parent was held by the bad guys who threatened the death of the hostage. It had seemed so obvious then, when sucks to be you meant the screen death of an actor, the death of a character in a book. So obvious that the sidekick who said, go on, or run, or never mind me, was also a hero. And the hero, with the capital H, should acknowledge that, and blow the bad guys away, even if his friend, lover, child, parent died. Not waste the sacrifice. It was a lot less obvious when the face staring into hers was one she'd known for years, and very well since the start of this voyage. The man who was supposed to be taking care of her, the man she respected and, yes, loved. She had the pistol bow, but She wasn't a Story Cube hero. She wasn't even a soldier.
Don't do it, Kai. Don't let him get the ship.
The mate's arm tightened. Kylara could see Gary struggling for breath. Payson rolled his eyes.
Oh, please. What thriller do you think you're playing in, old man?
Kai pulled the trigger. The saw-edged bolt buried itself in his throat. Payson jerked in reaction, then slumped. A burst of glee, hot as lightning, shot through Kai's head. She saw the mate's arm move, a red spurt from Gary's neck. She yanked the cocking lever as the next bolt came up. The mate lunged. Her shot missed his face. Her next bounced off his chest as he rushed her, knife extended. Kai twisted, recocked, and shot again at an awkward angle. The broad point sliced his throat from side to side. He slumped into the bulkhead, twitching. Kai pulled the cocking lever again. Only two bolts left.
Don't move!
The rest of the mutineers seemed frozen, eyes wide and mouths open in shock. Kristoffsen stepped forward, fists clenched.
You murderer! Come on, all of you, get her!
Kai and Mihar fired together. One bolt caught Kristoffsen in the neck, one in the chest. He collapsed. Again, that jolt of glee.
Put your hands on your heads!
Slowly, the others moved to obey.
Sit down where you are and don't move!
They sat. They looked frightened. Kai could sense that the urge to rush her had vanished.
Aren't you going to do something for them?
They're dead.
Kai was sure Payson was, less sure of the others. But without advanced trauma care, they would certainly die.
You are alive, and you will stay that way if you do exactly what you're told. Mihar!
Yes, Captain.
Cover them.
Mihar had her own bow. Kai reloaded and handed the bow back. Someone took it from her hand. She moved forward, hoping against hope that Gary Tobai had survived. He lay mostly on his back on top of Payson, his neck twisted and blood flowing from under it. Under her hand, his pulse wavered. She had no idea what to do.
Gary, can you hear me?
His eyelids fluttered. His gray lips twitched. No more.
Is he alive? I was a medic.
You! You're the reason he's dying!
But maybe we can save him.
As if I'd trust you!
But who else did she have? She glared at the man, savagely pleased that he paled a little.
All right. You, come here. No one else move!
The man scrambled forward on hands and knees.
Sandoval, Empress Rose, Chief Steward. Just let me...
His hand reached out, checked Gary's pulse, his fingers next to Kai's. He shook his head.
I don't think...
He turned Gary's head slightly, exposing a gaping wound. Even as they watched, the flow of blood slackened. Under Kai's fingers, the pulse stilled. A last feeble movement of air warmed Kai's hand.
He's gone.
I'm sorry. Without a trauma team, even a med box can't help.
A vast, empty space opened in Kai's head. She had never seen someone she knew die before. She had no way to identify what she felt, only that it was completely different from what she felt about Payson and his mate. And she had no time.
Get back with the others.
She would deal with her feelings later. Now she had a ship to save. She pushed herself to her feet. With Payson, his mate, and Kristoffsen dead, the others seemed meeker. Kai didn't trust that. She wasn't in the mood to trust anyone about anything. But she didn't have dozens of separate cells to isolate them in, or the means to create such, or the crew to take care of the prisoners' basic needs. What threat would prevent another attempt to take over her ship? Decompression would. The fact that it would certainly kill the innocent as well as the guilty didn't bother her at the moment. Kai began rocking from heel to toe in front of the assembled passengers.
Here's the situation. None of us asked for this. It was forced on all of us. We should have been allies. You chose instead to consider me and my crew as your enemies. Those of you who didn't back this mutiny at least did nothing to stop it. In the process, you killed a dear friend of mine. A man who had worked hard to convert the cargo holds into something more comfortable for you. I don't trust you anymore. Under the law, we're in deep space, and you know what that means. I'm the captain, and you tried to mutiny. I could kill you all, and though your employers might grumble, they know they wouldn't have a case in court.
They said it'd be easy.
That was a stocky man in the front row. one of the Empress Rose crew again.
Oh, really?
Yes.
The man glanced back over his shoulder, then looked again at her.
Said we outnumbered the crew, and the only hope of survival was to take over from you, because you were too young and inexperienced, and just sitting out here with the drive off, nobody would ever find us again. We'd end up starving, and you were too stupid to know it, and too scared of the mercs to do anything, even if you did know.
And you believed that?
Well, yes. There's more of us. You'd be scared, he said.
And what do you think now?
Didn't work, did it? You just killed him in cold blood?
Not cold blood. Pazin and the rest of you were attacking me, my crew, my ship. But yes, I killed them. And I will kill anyone who tries the same thing again. Do you believe me?
Yes.
Heads nodded.
Good. Keep believing it. Because the first time you act like you don't, I'll space the lot of you. I intend to keep my crew, my ship, and myself alive. And if that takes killing all of you, I won't hesitate.
Some looked scared, some looked glum, none looked defiant.
Now, keeping your hands on your heads, get back on your feet and walk, do not run, back to the cargo compartments. When you get there, you will sit down in rows, facing the bulkheads.
They had to be able to search those compartments, undo whatever taps the mutineers had put into the ship's own system. She turned to her crew.
Bia, you, Mihar, Hospedin, and Ted take them there. I'm going to get someone to clean up this mess.
Kai stood there as the crowd shuffled away, as Mihar, Bia, and the others stepped carefully past and herded the mutineers back to their space. Her knees sagged. She couldn't even lean on the bulkheads, spattered as they were with blood still wet, and the smell. She staggered back up the passage and made it as far as the galley.
Killer.
She felt shamed and sick and horribly excited all at once.
Kai? What's happened? I can't find Gary.
Gary's...
Kai bent over the sink again, trying to rid herself of the guilt.
Is he hurt?
He's dead, Quincy. They had him.
Her vision blurred, and she braced herself against the counter.
Sorry. We have organic debris. We need to get it cleaned up. Don't send Aline.
Bad enough for the rest of them. But Aline worked with Gary, had worked with Gary, every day.
I'll get to work.
Kai washed her face and looked down at her uniform. Blood, some still glistening. She could feel it drying on her face. She would have to change. She had work to do. She had a ship to run. She had no time to spend on sorting out feelings. As if from a distance, she heard MacRobert's voice back when she was a cadet.
Just do it.
All right. Just do it.
No excuses, no apologies. She went back out to the passage, where the stench met her before she came in sight of the mess. Two of the crew, Lee and Seth, were standing with buckets and mops, looking sick. The bodies hadn't been moved.
What are we going to do with them?
A good question. She wasn't about to put those bodies in with the food in the cooler and freezer, but they couldn't be left here.
Space them. We don't have storage. I'll document identity, and then we'll put them in the escape hatch and open it.
The thought of kneeling beside them with the recorder, documenting prints and ID implants and so on, sickened her, but it had to be done. She deserved to do it, after that surge of glee. Lee looked at Gary's body.
All of them?
No. Of course not Gary. We'll find room for him in the freezer. But the others. Get a small dolly from Aline, but don't let her come up here and see this. When you've dumped them, ask Mitt what he wants to use to clean the mess. I've got to get it off me.
Kai paused. No, better do the ID first, while she was still dirty. She went back to the galley, washed her hands and face, put on gloves from beneath the sink, and looked up the protocols for death in transit accidental victim, certifying identity of in the code, which was the closest category she could find. Then, when she had the information safely coded, she helped push the dolly down the corridor, helped pile the three bodies in the emergency access against the outside, pushed the controls to open the outer lock. She felt better when the corpses were safely out in space, where they could do her no harm. Slightly better. She had Mitt shut off the showers to the passengers so that she could shower long enough to get really clean and run her uniform through the fresher. And still, the shock, the grief she had no time to deal with, hovered somewhere in the near distance, waiting to pounce when her attention wavered. She would not let it waver. Mackenzie Military Assistance Corporation had shifted to a more familiar civilian style of corporate organization. Clients seemed reassured to find out that MMAC had a business-suited CEO and CFO instead of a commander in uniform. So did the many civilian employees who kept MMAC's central office working smoothly. Its city offices, two floors of the Sugarine Tower West, reflected the profitability of the business, from the polished marble paneling to the hand-woven Ismarin rugs and the leather-upholstered furniture. Pictures on the wall of the reception area were originals, exotic game animals and wilderness scenes, suggesting adventure without hinting at violence. All scenes of soldiers in uniform or combat machinery were elsewhere in the private offices of executives or in the conference rooms. The current CEO, despite his elegant suiting, had been one of the four field commanders until 5 years before, when old John Mackenzie himself picked him for what they called taking point with the clients. 3 years at a regional support headquarters, with TDY to the city offices, where the civvy staff got used to the quiet, almost cherubic redhead. A year as understudy to Stammy Versch, who was as craggy as a story cube general. And now, Arlen Becker had the watch, and one of his operations had disappeared when the Sabine Ansibles went down. Old John had been on the horn within an hour. Old John missed nothing.
I don't have to tell you we didn't do it.
Tessin has a good record, but ISC is going to be all over us when they figure out who's there.
We could volunteer that.
Breach of confidentiality.
So Arlen sat on it, carrying on the day-to-day work of the corporation, which kept him busy even when there wasn't a crisis. MMAC owned more than military materiel and employed more than mercs. He was expecting the call that finally came from ISC, though not the rank of the individual who showed up in person in his outer office, demanding to see him.
She says she's a special advisor to the chairman of the ISC board.
What do we have to clear?
You have that regional sales conference.
Boring, and he was just there to put pressure on the vice presidents.
I won't go. They can gossip among themselves. What else?
The list flashed on the implant visual. Nothing that couldn't be shifted a few hours.
Send her in.
Arlen glanced around his office, immaculate as always, and set the perimeter safeties. ISC was rumored to employ assassins, but only as a last resort. He didn't think they'd try one for a first contact, but no reason to be stupidly complacent. ISC's special advisor to the chairman was a short, dark-haired woman with a silver streak over the crown of her head. She wore a slightly crinkled, dusty rose linen dress, shoes he recognized as stylish and expensive, and carried an old-fashioned lady's briefcase, a pattern of cabbage roses tooled and beaded in soft pinks against maroon leather. Rings glittered on her hands. Her earrings looked like natural emeralds. They matched her eyes. Her glance around his office missed nothing, he was sure. He came around his desk, and she offered her hand. He shook it. Small, but firm and cool. She had the calluses of someone who had used a small firearm on a regular basis for a long time. He waved her to the cluster of chairs and low couch near a coffee table.
Perhaps you'd like to sit here?
She didn't move.
First, I'd like a straight answer to one question.
It was absurd. She barely came up to his chest. And yet he had the feeling that he was the schoolboy and she was the teacher.
Certainly.
Were you hired to blow up the communications and financial ansibles in the Sabine system?
No. No one asked us to. And if they had, we would not have taken the contract.
Did you blow them up by accident?
To my knowledge, we did not blow them up at all. And that's two questions.
So it is.
She moved to the seating area, choosing the seat Arlen would have chosen in her position, and set her briefcase on the low table. She reached for the clasps.
Why don't you sit down, General? This is going to take a while.
Becker was almost amused at her effrontery. He sat down anyway.
I'm not a general anymore, you know.
Oh, but you are.
She opened the briefcase flat. One side held a compact portable mini Ansible, the other a rack of data cubes.
Generals don't quit being generals when they put on business suits. You commanded the 3rd in the Valencia affair, the Jirai border war, and the defense of Karis. Quite able as a field commander, though I have to wonder why you didn't make use of your amphibious capabilities on Jirai. On paper, it looks like you could have flanked the enemy.
Arlen could feel his neck getting hot. This would not do.
Are you a military historian, ma'am?
Good heavens, no. A military analyst. Quite different function. No one in their right mind would let me near students.
You know my background, ma'am. What's yours?
Backwater world. Nasty little cultural conflict. My side won, or I wouldn't be here.
You were involved?
Community defense. Come now, General. You didn't think ISC would send someone to talk to you who wasn't a combat veteran, did you?
You?
He could not get past the fact that she was a plump little middle-aged woman in a crinkled linen dress and fashionable shoes. A pink dress, for the gods' sake.
I'm sorry, General, to upset your stereotypes of military women, but on my homeworld, we're all short. And if we aren't starved, we put meat on our bones. True, I was only in the local militia for 3 years, but I can assure you I have been shot at and returned fire. My boss felt you deserved to have someone listen to you who understood your problems.
I see. I'm sorry, I just...
You come from a world where the average height is almost 20 centimeters taller than the average on my world. I understand that. Now, I am recording.
She did not ask permission, he noted, and he doubted that the office's security systems were interfering with the recorder.
You say that you weren't hired to blow the Ansibles, and you have no information suggesting that your force blew them, is that correct?
Yes.
Excellent. Care to tell me why you didn't inform ISC of that at once when you heard the Ansibles were blown and you knew you had a force in system?
Client confidentiality.
Right. So, when did you find out?
The relay ship outside the system reported losing contact. That was 1342 hours UTC on Central 346. The relay ship was on a 2-hour schedule, though. We heard from other sources that the actual time of Ansible loss was...
1202 hours, yes. You have documentation of the relay ship's notification?
Yes, but...
We may need to see that later. Now, this was not a full-scale operation, is that right?
Right. Advisory, with a 5,000-man support team.
John Calvin Tessin, your on-site commander?
How does she know that?
Yes.
Your organization and your field commanders all have acceptable ratings with ISC... And I presume you wish to keep that rating?
Yes, of course.
We're going to have to ask you to post a bond, I'm afraid. Even though you have an acceptable rating, even though we have no evidence yet that your personnel were responsible, they are on site with weapons capable of taking out 2 Ansibles.
A bond?
It's an unusual situation, you see.
She paused, rubbed the tip of one carefully polished pink fingernail along the edge of her briefcase.
It's been 6 years since anyone last intentionally destroyed an ISC Ansible. Political group on Newman's, you may recall. We dealt with them.
ISC had invaded the system, as they had invaded systems before where someone destroyed their Ansibles. And that political group no longer existed.
Although we had considered the possibility we now face in previous adverse events, the military force at hand was the one which intentionally destroyed Ansibles. That's a simple situation. If, in fact, Mackenzie is not responsible here, either by accident or design, as you have stated, then we are faced with something we had considered in theory but not faced in practice. Policy, written in advance of experience, requires that we obtain a bond from you to be returned upon proof that your personnel were not responsible.
What kind of bond?
She smiled. The kind of feral smile that Arlen knew very well from his own people.
The usual. Monetary or a lien on equipment. Not quite ruinous, but serious.
What kind of proof of our non-involvement will you require?
And who will adjudicate this?
It is not the practice of the ISC to seek or submit to the judgment of civil courts, as I believe you already know. We will determine that involvement or non-involvement on the basis of evidence collected by our own personnel. On the other hand, since we are apolitical except with respect to the communications business, we have no motive for finding one way or the other.
You're apolitical. I find that hard to believe.
It's quite true. We do not care who is the government anywhere. We are not concerned with the crime rate, the state of the planetary environment, or any of the other things which motivate other corporations to interfere in local politics. Thus, we need no lobbyists, no political backing. We have one focus, maintaining our interstellar monopoly. No one else can do what we do, and even if they could, we wouldn't let them.
But surely...
We haven't diversified. That is our strength that others would find weakness. We do one thing well, superbly, in fact, and we protect our market. Since that market is not limited to any one planet, it is in no government's interest to interfere. Some of them are too stupid to realize that, but we educate them.
All right. You're apolitical. And you want us to post a bond. With whom?
You have a choice, since Mackenzie hasn't had a prior incident with us. We will discount the amount if you choose to place it with us. Or you may choose the full amount placed in escrow at Simmons and Teague.
And the amount?
20 million, which I believe is in the range of your contract amount with Secundus.
How the devil does she know that?
There's another thing. There's a civilian ship captain in the Sabine system of some interest to us.
Oh?
I understand from your literature and your history that you do not usually interfere much with neutral shipping, but clearly this operation has not been ordinary. If you could explain what procedures are likely to have been followed, and the likelihood of this individual being unharmed, it would be much appreciated.
Who is it?
Vada Transport Limited, out of Slaughter Key. Their chief financial officer's daughter was on her first voyage as commander and was reported in Sabine's system just before the Ansibles went down. Any information you receive or could provide...
Vada Transport Limited. Arlen didn't have to look that name up. Vada had a star rating with their off-planet suppliers.
I don't know anything now. We've heard nothing since the Ansibles went down. But I can say that our policy is always to disrupt neutral shipping as little as possible. Of course, we recognize Vada Transport as a legitimate shipping company and would have no reason to cause harm.
If a young, inexperienced captain hadn't done something stupid. Arlen hoped very much that Mackenzie hadn't killed off the daughter of the CFO of a company they needed, but he knew it was possible.
With the Ansibles being blown, the on-site commander might have chosen to check out every ship in the system, board them, choose one for a courier, and intern the others.
He hoped the Vada ship had been chosen for courier, in which case it would show up in a few days, in range of an Ansible, and they'd have some hard data.
If you hear...
I will let you know. Should I contact you and Vada, or just you?
Either is fine. Now, about that bond...
Whatever profit they thought they'd have out of their employer, posting that large a bond would knock it back to a bad idea and a contract they should never have signed. That he should never have signed.
I have to get Sig to sign off on this, you know. Let me just contact him.
Though, of course, he would agree. No one could afford to have the ISC as an enemy. Undoing the damage the mutineers had done proved more difficult than Kai had hoped. She dared not trust any of the passengers to help. Some of them might still want to mutiny, no matter what they said. She had no specialist with expertise in reconfirming an AI's original command set.
It's an old system, though.
Kai stared at the panel she and Bia had just pulled.
Don't I know it? But that doesn't make it better.
It might. Do you have the system manual anywhere but in the system?
I had one in my implant, and there may be one in the command console. I suppose you want me to look.
Yes, Captain. It's just possible that the system could be taken down and restarted if we had the manual.
Nobody takes down ship's AI while they're operational, Bia. That'd take down life support as well.
Not necessarily.
Bia laid a diagram on Kai's desk. She tried to make sense of its many interlaced lines. Finally, she shook her head.
Ugh. I can't see it, Bia. If you're absolutely sure that you can do it without taking down life support...
Well, 85% sure.
Not enough percents. What if you can't get it back up? We don't have suits for all those people, and the suit air supply's limited anyway.
Spaced a lot of them.
They're our... my responsibility, like it or not. I'll space them in a heartbeat if they endanger the ship or crew again, Bia. But I'm not going to risk them on a chance like this.
Well, that's all we have, Captain. We can attack the control sections one at a time, but it'll take time, a lot of time. We may be out of fuel before we can shut the drive off.
It's a chance we have to take. Protect the environmental system above all. They were all exhausted, emotionally and physically, pushing themselves. She could just sit there and let them drift farther and farther away from their expected location until they starved, or she could do something, anything, to fix the situation. Dumping the passengers still appealed as a way of easing her frustration, but she knew she wouldn't do that. Kai didn't have a lot of options, with both the drive and the ship beacon out of order, with ship's systems responding only erratically to her crew's instructions. Wearily, she approached the nearest comm panel.
This is the captain. All section firsts report to the bridge.